Bienvenidos, esto es Naturaleza y Comunidad de la Pachamama. Pachamama significa Madre Tierra, Pachamama means Mother Earth. Mm. Y en este programa vamos a hablar de diferentes temas. Hablamos de estudiantes de Humboldt State University, en qué se están enfocando los temas de su investigación. También hacemos entrevistas a los profesores de la universidad de acá, de Humboldt State University, cuáles son sus recomendaciones para los futuros investigadores. Y también quiero saludar a todo al público en general y a mis compatriotas en Perú, que quizás nos va a escuchar en el futuro en nuestro programa de Naturaleza y Comunidad de la Pachamama. Y a todos mis paisanos, Huayje Panaycuna y Maynallan Cachanquis, Karulyachtamanta, Samaykamuchaykis. This is means like hermanos y hermanas, ¿cómo están? Desde tierras lejanas les estoy mandando salud a todos mis paisanos de Apurímac. Espero que nos puedan escuchar. Y este programa no solamente es para enfocarse de temas de aquí, en Estados Unidos, en este pueblo que es Humboldt County, pero también nosotros queremos traer otros temas de justicia, de violencia quizás, de injusticia, de temas sociales que están pasando en otros países como por ejemplo en Perú, en México. Entonces a través de este programa queremos hacer eso, ¿no? Queremos traer todas las voces y problemas ambientales que están pasando en otros países. Y también quiero saludar, muchísimas gracias a Jessica por permitirnos hacer posible este programa. Y hoy día tengo una invitada muy especial. Ella es una mujer indígena de acá, de Norteamérica. Nos va a explicar sobre su investigación y también cómo es la vida como indígena acá en América. Muchas veces nosotros no entendemos, vivimos en otro país y no sabemos cómo es la vida de los indígenas, de los nativos acá en Estados Unidos. Así que ella es mi compañera de mi programa de maestría y ella nos va a compartir sobre nuestra investigación. No habla español, así que vamos a hacer la entrevista en inglés. Thank you, Kayla, coming here, and would you like to share to your experience who you are?
Yes, thank you, Johanna. I just wanted to say in Shang Shanula, which in my language means good for me, you did. Thank you. It was really beautiful to hear you speaking your language. And I would like to introduce myself to you today in Wailaki, which is one of my languages that I'm a language learner, so it's really inspiring to hear you share your words. In Shang Shakaye, Kelda Britain Shigoshwe, Shanang Kathy Britain Bagoshwe, Shata Stanford Britain Bagoshwe, Round Valley is Kita. So what I said was greetings, my relatives. My name is Kelda Britain. Kathy Britton is my mother, Stanford Britton is my father, and Round Valley is my people amongst tribes. I was born and raised on the Round Valley Indian Reservation in Covelo, California, which is about 3 hours south of here. And I am a graduate student here at Humboldt State University in the Environment and Community Program.
Amazing. Can you tell me a little bit about how is life, which struggles do you face daily as an indigenous woman here in America?
Oh, that's a tough question. You know, for me, I think that one of my biggest struggles growing up is, because of colonization and boarding schools, I didn't grow up learning my language. And that was something that is very hurtful for me. And I didn't understand, growing up why that was. And so, the true story of California history and Indigenous people is not always taught in our school systems. And so I didn't have the opportunity to learn about that until college, actually. I went to college at Haskell Indian Nations University, which is a tribal college in Lawrence, Kansas. And during that time, there were at least 150 different nations represented there. And hearing my friends speak in their languages made me really start questioning, well, why is it that I don't know my language and what happened to my ancestors? So I think that, as an Indigenous woman, there are so many issues that we face daily. And I find that just reconnecting to culture and my community is helping me face some of those challenges.
Wow, it's amazing. That is what do you say is true, you know, connecting with our nature, with our culture. Can you tell us a little bit about your research as an ANC program?
Sure. So my research is actually in Fort Yukon and Arctic Village, Alaska. So upon graduating with my undergraduate degree, I returned home for a short time, and I ended up in Alaska doing an internship. I thought it was going to be 3 months, but it actually turned into 3 years. And during that time, I really got an in-depth education about, you know, the struggles that a lot of the Indigenous or Alaska Native people are going through. And so I had the opportunity to live and work in Gwichaje, the community of Fort Yukon. It's about 145 miles north of Fairbanks, and it's off the road system. And so I really felt that it was important for me to make sure that my research would be able to give something back to that community, because I felt like I spent so much time there and they shared so much with me that I wanted to continue my studies there, even if I wasn't physically living there. So actually, I'll read you the title of my thesis,
of course,
if that's
yeah.
okay. And it's still yeah. a working title. But so far, what I have is Stories of the Leaders, Past and Present, an Evaluation of Tribal Co-Management in the Yukon Flats, Interior Alaska. And I actually have my abstract here, so I can share a little bit if you want to.
Yes, yes. Okay. Give us a brief introduction.
Okay, I'll try to keep it brief here.
Yeah.
The Legal History of Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or ANCSA, created an arbitrary and fragmented management system for Gwich'in people in interior Alaska. Land ownership in Alaska is under multiple jurisdictions, which creates complicated parameters for management of fish and wildlife. Since 1975, the Indian Self-Determination and Education Act, also known as Public Law 638, has provided the legal framework within tribes or tribal organizations like the Council of Athabascan Tribal Governments to exercise their right to self-determine and self-governance. So CATG, or the council, is a consortium of 10 tribes, villages in the interior. And what happened was in 1985, they formed an Indigenous grassroots organization because of federal and state mismanagement, health care. A lot of things were happening during that time, and the tribes got together and felt like their voices would be stronger together. So they formed the council, and this is where I actually worked while I was up in Alaska. And the interesting thing about CATG is they actually were the first tribal entity to form a partnership or a funding agreement with a conservation unit. So that was with the Yukon Flats Fish and Wildlife Service. So for my research, I'm looking at how those agreements were formed and where they are today, and, you know, what the vision of the leadership was during the 80s.
Interesting. What is the difference or similarity between in Alaska, in tribal politics in Alaska, and here in Humboldt County?
So, yeah, that's really interesting. One of the things is that Alaska Native people are federally recognized, but they're not recognized as sovereign nations by the state of Alaska. So I know that in California, a lot of the Indigenous tribes are also, you know, federally recognized, but not recognized by the state of California, or some are not recognized at all. So that's one of the similarities. And then another thing is that Wailaki people, my people, were also Athabascan dialect. So it's interesting that there's that similarity, because Gwich'in people are also Athabascan.
Wow, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some findings did you find in your research?
So I'm not quite to the findings phase yet. I'm still working on my analysis. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm doing for my analysis is I'm applying an adaptive co-management framework, and mm-hmm. then I'm making some recommendations that the council can work towards to improve their agreements with the agencies.
Okay, interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about the method that you use for your research?
Sure. So I used participant observation. I spent 6 weeks last summer doing field work. I spent 5 weeks in Gwich'ajé in Fort Yukon, and then I spent a week in Vajrayko, Arctic Village. And Arctic Village is really a special place. They call it, can't think of the name of it, but it's essentially the sacred place where life begins, and it's the birthing grounds for the porcupine caribou herd. And if it's okay, I actually brought a quote that I wanted to share.
Yes.
So one of my interview participants is an elder, and he actually received his honorary doctorate from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And I stayed with him and his wife. They just had their 63rd wedding anniversary. So they've been together a long time. We have been here for thousands of years, and there's lots of stories about the history of caribou and their relationship with people and many other animals. Our people talk with caribou. This time of the year, my father would usually sit outside every day looking for caribou. They know this is the time that they would be coming. They know a lot about the weather, too. One time, the fog lifted off the mountains in the morning, and my father said, "For sure, there's caribou coming." He knew that the caribou were there. There's a lot of other things that they know about caribou. They dream about it, too. So we are connected with the animals. Without caribou, I don't think we're going to be here anymore.
Wow, amazing. As a research here in America, what are your recommendations for research in, for example, indigenous subject? What do you recommend for students who want to do this, pursue this research?
Well, I think that there's a difference in doing indigenous research and doing research in indigenous communities. And I would just recommend, if you are doing research in indigenous communities, just to make sure that you are including that community voice. And there's a great framework. It's called the Spiderweb Conceptual Framework. And there's a whole, I don't have the diagram with me, but it just basically starts with, you know, in the center is your heart, your passion, why you want to do that work. And then it goes all the way around in a circle, and it gives recommendations on how to work with communities. And I really like that model. And I think that it would be a good foundation for anyone who is interested in really working with communities and making sure that that community voice is always at the forefront.
Wow, yeah, that is great recommendations. What is your plan for the future after your master's is done?
So I have actually been working a couple days a week at this high school in Round Valley. And so I'm working on getting my emergency credential, and I'm hoping to teach next year. I would like to continue developing. There's some really great land curriculum development, as well as Wailaki language, that's happening in our valley right now. And so I'm really excited to work with young people and carry forth some of this great work.
Why do you think it's important education in this century, especially for indigenous people?
Yeah, I think that, you know, education is really the foundation to so many things, and it creates so much opportunity and opens so many doors for people. And, you know, even being trained in Western education, you know, I feel like, you know, Indigenous people are creating all of these different creative ways to make it work for their communities. And I just really want the young people in my community to know that education is available to them, and they don't have to go to school if they want to go right to work after high school, but it's available. And I want them to know that if I could do it, they could do it.
Exactly. And after you finish your research, will you like to go to maybe Alaska to share your, you know, your research with the people there in the community? Is your plan or what do you?
Yes, that's definitely. It might take a little bit for me. It's very expensive to travel to Alaska, but I definitely will go back and visit, and I want to share my findings and share my research. And that was one of the really important teachings that I learned from another one of my elders. They said, you know, make sure that you don't forget about us. Don't forget about the people and bring your knowledge back.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Thank you very much for coming to this program and sharing your own knowledge and your research. Really, we appreciate it. I hope that you can come again and talk about your final results of your research. Thank you very much, Kayla.
Thank you, Johanna.
Yo no conocí una tarde parado frente a un gran abismo y ni siquiera me miró. Poderoso el viento que subía por aquel acantilado, sosteniendo su emoción. Solo dos talones en la tierra, todo el cuerpo en el vacío, sobre el aire se apoyó. Se meló la sangre recordando si es que en lo que he caminado había visto tal valor. Ahora sé que hasta el viento se inclina ante el amor. Ahora sé que hasta el miedo termina sirviendo al amor. Su cuerpo parecía flotar sobre una nube irreal, entre la mente y la materia. No existe el bien, no existe el mal, ya no hay frontera que cruzar, solo nos queda la conciencia. De pronto retrocedió y me miró lleno de amor, aquel señor del gran abismo. Solo una frase y se marchó, eres solo tu respiración, en paz yo doy y en paz recibo. Ahora sé que no hay nada, corazón, más que cariño. Ahora sé que el gran maestro es un abismo. Solo el amor puede curar, solo el amor puede intentar vencer al monstruo del olvido. De olvidarte de quién eres, de quién fuiste y de qué hiciste, del amor algo prohibido. Nunca te canses de intentar, de recordar una vez más que es ya tú lo más divino. Y aunque no puedas comprender, en cada muerte hay un nacer, por eso duele estar tan vivo. Ahora sé que no soy nada, corazón, más que cariño. Ahora sé que las serpientes son sé que el gran maestro.